Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
All right, folks, we're back from the break. And this is Marshall Wood with you for the second half of Let's Face the Issues, normally hosted by Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. And before I continue, let me say that I'm not a pastor, I'm not a theologian, I'm a retired Air Force pilot and commercial pilot. And I have studied the Bible thoroughly for many, many years, but I have a very interesting intel background, some experiences in the Air Force that make me passionate about the days that we live in. And sometimes my passion causes me to step on people's toes, sometimes unintentionally, but today would be intentionally. I don't have much respect for the Democrat Party, as you can tell, and I express that with my First Amendment rights. So if you're upset with what I say, feel free to take it up with me. You can call the church. The church will give you my phone number, and I'll talk to you. But be prepared for a pretty stern discussion, because I stand on what I say. America is at a tipping point, and I believe we're past the tipping point because we have forgotten the values. And, you know, I said yesterday, I start, and I didn't do it today, but I start every speech I give or any lesson I teach with four questions, and that is, do you believe? And it's reference to, do you believe in God? And then, okay, you believe in God. Now, what exactly do you believe? And then the third question is, well, you say you believe, and you say what you believe, but what do you really believe? And fourthly, as a result of what you really, really believe, what are you doing about it? A firm belief, a true belief, an accurate belief, a focused belief always produces action. So the man talking with you today does believe. He knows what he believes. He knows what he really believes. And as a result, I'm talking to you on the radio today. I've written a book. I'm working on a second one. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. The intensity that you hear in my voice is genuine. I believe America has passed a tipping point, and I believe I found that back in November of this year, when I just happened to be on the set of the 700 Club, when Michael Medved was introducing his new book, God's Hand on America. And I had a few moments to talk. Cindy and I, my wife and I, had a chance to talk to Michael Medved, with whom I'd had some association in 2015 at a rally for Republican candidates before the 2016 election. And I knew him to be a very principled, intelligent man, an excellent author, and a man who understood the history of our country. And so we chatted briefly on the, I think it was November the 19th, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, we had a great discussion. He introduced his book that day. I picked up a copy immediately, and I found in reading it an affirmation of the providential hand of God in America. Now, most Christians, those who say they're Christians, have this, I think, very inaccurate idea that God made the world, and then he judged the Jews and said, well, we're kicking you to the curb because you didn't do what I told you to do. And so now I'm going to create some new Jews, and they're going to be called the Christians. And they're, by my grace, are going to be the ones who are predestined to run things and make it to heaven. Everybody else is literally going to go to hell in a handbasket. And things are going to get better and better and better in the world until the keys of the kingdom are, the keys of America are handed back to God. Now, that's a poor summary, but that's generally the pervasive thought pattern of the majority of people that call themselves Christians in America. To them, the Jews had their chance, they missed it, and they're gone. They've been kicked to the curb. And as a result of that, the Jews have suffered incredible persecution. But the reality is this, America, and this is not taught in schools anymore. In fact, it hasn't been taught probably for 50 or even 60 years in our school system. The American forefathers had an incredible view of the Jewish people. And it grew, there was a parallel understanding even in Great Britain that produced the awareness that God's people are the Jews, and one day they will return to their homeland. And at the time that people began considering that, it didn't even seem possible because the Ottoman Empire controlled all of the Holy Land, and for almost 1,000 years, Christians and Jews were, if they were even given access to the homeland, which the Crusades were an attempt to do that, if they were even given access, they were under the subjugation of either the Mamluks that ruled Egypt, or the original the Arabian Islamists, or then the Ottoman Turks. They had, I think, the longest reigning, the longest empire in human history. But America uniquely, amongst the nations that routinely persecuted the Jews, America's forefathers, including George Washington and a number of people that preceded him when America was being birthed, like Cotton Mather of New England and some others, understood that the Jews people, the Jewish people, were God's people, and anyone that blessed the Jews would themselves be blessed, and those that cursed or harmed the apple of God's eye would be cursed. On October 12th in 1492, when Columbus began to sail the ocean blue, the same day that he left port, there was a great diaspora of the Jewish people in Spain. They were cast out, driven out, because they were the Christ killers, according to the reigning theologians of that day. And their presence was not welcome, plus the fact with their Moorish traditions and the fact that the Islamists of North Africa were so influential in Spanish history, that was another reason to drive the Jews away. But America, as it is today, still a unique nation amongst the nations of history, saw the Jews a little bit differently. So I'm going to just read you some selected passages here from the fourth chapter of Michael Medved's book. And I want to make a point. These were the Anabaptists and the Baptists were really the backbone of the founding of America through New England. Now, yeah, you had the Plymouth, you had the Virginia Company, Tea Company or whatever, in Jamestown and those areas. But those colonies were not very successful, and the theological and the governmental values of our country really came out of New England, Providence, Rhode Island, and Plymouth, and that sort of thing. And these were Anabaptists. I'm going to call your attention to a painting that is found at Cornell University called The Modern Moses in 1881, and it's a political cartoon. It shows Uncle Sam as the modern Moses. Now, just 8 months after the assassination of Russia's Tsar, which provoked brutal massacres against Russia's Jewish population, the satirical magazine book at Cornell University depicted the United States as the favored refugee for the oppressed masses. Now, this is a quote. "To the immigrants themselves and to the astonished Americans who watched their mass arrival in amazement, the sudden explosion in the American Jewish population seemed miraculous, inevitably suggesting biblical analogies." Now, starting in 1881, some 2.5 million desperate, destitute Eastern European Jews washed up on American shores to connect an ancient text to a young nation's sense of its own special destiny. For the implacably confident citizens of the surging United States, these exotic newcomers, these Jewish people, provided new perspective on three mystical Genesis verses that had resonated with their forefathers since the earliest days of the British settlement. Goes on to talk about the passages. I'm going to skip that now for time. But the Pilgrims and the Puritans, again, those folks associated mostly with New England, prayed for similar blessings, and they connected their own, what we call, errand into the wilderness, leaving Europe and coming to a new land, with Abraham's fateful mission to build a new godly life in a promised land that he hadn't even seen. Remember, God looked down on Ur of the Chaldees, scanned the people that were there, and found the son of an idol maker, and said, "May I have your attention, please?" if you will do this, I will do that. And by the way, the if is you've got to follow me and go where I tell you to go and to depend on me. And if you do that, I'm going to make you a great nation. And you know the rest of the story. The Pilgrims and the Puritans had that sense of similar mission. God had called them to go somewhere and do something. And many of them saw the necessity of creating a haven for the Jewish people. They began to respond to that early on, particularly in 1881, with massive immigration to America, though in total numbers it wasn't great, but for the total Jewish population it was huge, to come to America and to be welcome. They proudly identified themselves, that's the Puritans and the Pilgrims, as New Testament Hebrews. They also cherished a biblical idea that the other tribes of the earth would one day earn reward or punishment based on their treatment of the new nation that God had decreed into existence. I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you, I will curse. The Lord assures Abraham, and by implication his descendants, far into the future, and all the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you. When English Puritans crossed the Atlantic and dreams of building holy refuge on a wild and desolate continent were eventually fulfilled, they took their philo-Semitic attitudes with them, their pro-Jewish attitudes. In New England, the influential theologian and charismatic pastor Roger Williams pleaded incessantly for acceptance and even welcome of the widely despised and persecuted Jews. When he found himself expelled from the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1635, for his defiant insistence on congregational autonomy, he proceeded with his followers to found the new colony of Rhode Island, with its capital pointedly designated as Providence. During a visit to England in 1652, Williams petitioned Parliament on the issue of welcoming Jewish immigration to all corners of the British world. I humbly conceive it to be the duty of the civil magistrate, as he said, to break down that superstitious wall of separation as to civil things, giving us Gentiles and the Jews, and freely, without their asking, to make way for their free and their peaceable habitation amongst us. Now, 4 years later, Parliament made the fateful decision to accede to that request and to permit a reestablished Jewish presence in Britain. Just 2 years after that, Roger Williams welcomed the first Jewish settlers to his own American colony. Now, this final bit, in the interest of time to keep it short, in the next three generations of New England leadership, the most prominent scholars and magistrates brought even greater focus and passion to their obsessive identification with the children of Abraham. John Cotton, the preeminent theologian of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, believed that the residents of this model godly commonwealth should follow Old Testament law, because God, who was then bound up with in covenant with the Hebrews to be their God, has put us in their stead and has become our God as well as theirs, and hence we are much bound to the laws as well as themselves. Cotton Mather, the son of Increase Mather, that's his first name, Increase, who was the sixth president of, note this, Harvard College, which originally began as a seminary, became the most influential American Hebraist of the day. He quoted regularly from his encyclopedic knowledge of rabbinic literature, going beyond the Tanakh and the Talmud to include Maimonides, Nachmanides, that was his special favorite, Midrash, Rashi, and even mystical Kabbalistic volumes like the Zohar. Well, we don't necessarily agree with that, but that's the way they were at the time. Several sources report that he adopted the habit of wearing a skull cap as he pursued these studies at home, and even began calling himself rabbi at age 33 in 1696. No wonder that Mather's contemporary, Peter Folger, a Baptist missionary, a pioneer settler of Nantucket Island, and Benjamin Franklin's grandfather, proudly observed, "In New England, they are like the Jews, as like as they can be." The Jewish community never numbered more than 2,500 through the course of the Revolutionary War. representing less than 0.1% of the overall colonial population of nearly 3 million. Nevertheless, contemporaries look with admiration on the overwhelming percentage of Jews who backed the fight for independence, in contrast to the bitter divisions in the population at large. There was a homogeneity, there was a common purpose, a consensus amongst the Jews that America should exist and that it should be blessed by God. With these contributions in mind, I'm just about finished. With these contributions in mind, in the second year of his presidency under the new Constitution, George Washington made a special point to honor and praise the Republic's tiny Jewish communities. In a celebrated letter to Hebrew congregation of Newport, Rhode Island, at the time the nation's largest with nearly 200 souls, the president declared, "It is now no more than that toleration is spoken of as if it was by the indulgence of one class of people, that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves or carry on as good citizens in giving it on all occasion their effectual support." In 1790, the suggestion by the President of the Republic in a public proclamation that Jews might be considered good citizens in any sense would have struck other nations as shocking, radical, dangerous, and unprecedented. From the beginning, those who were the spiritual forefathers of America, such as those who preceded the thought processes of Dr. Gina Youngblood and the man who talks to you, they understood that the Jews had a destiny and America was destined to help them fulfill it. I flew in the Arab-Israeli War in 1973, and I underscore that. I saw God deliver Israel. And those people who say, "Well, Woody, you know, the Jews in Israel are not the real Jews, and you know, you really got to focus on the church and the New Age and the New Testament and on and on and on." Well, that's why we're at the tipping point, my fellow Americans and my brothers and sisters in Christ, because what I just read to you, and it's only a tiny portion, is testimony to why America has been blessed. It is testimony to the fact that the Jews are God's people, and when this nation whose purpose, God's hand on America, divine providence in the modern era, those people, Americans who have helped establish the Jews in their homeland in May of 1948, here I happen to have been born, to the actions of the most improbable president in American history, that not being Donald Trump, it was Harry Truman, a little bourbon-swigging Southern Baptist, a foul mouth, and a very independent spirit. But that foul-mouthed, independent Southern Baptist who liked to drink bourbon on his front porch had a Jewish business partner. And that Jewish business partner and a few Israeli operatives prevailed upon Harry S. Truman to recognize the emerged state of Israel, not to listen to General George Marshall, not to listen to the Secretary of State, not to listen to Churchill, not to listen to Stalin, who was our ally at the time, not even to listen to the 32nd President of the United States, not Franklin Roosevelt, but Eleanor, who had considerable weight in our country. All those said, no, you can't recognize Israel. We're going to lose oil from the Middle East, and we're going to offend our Arab partners. And that little unlikely president, Harry Truman, but by God's decree, slammed his fist down on the armchair of his locker and at home in Independence, Missouri, while talking to his former business partner in a haberdashery, said, "I'm so tired of you Jews. I'm so tired of this subject. But listen, I'll tell you what. Yes, yes, 1,000 times. Yes, I will recognize your country, your people, because of you, my business partner. And I will keep that word. Now, let's not hear anything about this anymore." And he slammed his fist down He went home to Washington, and he thumbed his nose at Churchill and Stalin and Eleanor Roosevelt and General George Marshall and all the others, and he said, "Today is the privilege of the United States of America to recognize the new state of Israel." And with that, the prophetic end times began to tick, or I'm not reading Matthew chapter 24, the great Olivet Discourse, correctly, as Dr. Youngblood describes it. Ladies and gentlemen, America is a tipping point. The value system that made America great, the value that produced Cotton Mather and Roger Williams and Billy Graham and some of the great other expositors previously in American history who knew that America had a purpose, and that purpose was to rebirth Israel in May of 1948. Those great people have passed away, and now the Democrat Party, when it's given its opportunity, they hope, on November the 3rd, 2020, turn their back on Israel, because the Democrat Party of the United States and even a number of Republicans on our side of the fence don't like Israel. And they'll turn their back on Israel. I have friends and relatives in my own family who are so, well, Calvinistic, I guess, in their views, that I hear that whispering, "Oh, no, no, we can't support Israel. That's a stumbling block." Oh, gosh, I've heard that before in Zechariah chapter 12, haven't we? "That I shall make Israel a stumbling block to the nations." And if we would just not support Israel, we wouldn't have a problem in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, even in our own country, at the same time Cotton Mather and Roger Williams and the other Anabaptists and Baptist forefathers, whose worldview is the same as the man talking to you and the man who is his pastor, Dr. Youngblood, there are also people in New Amsterdam, oops, that's New York, under Peter Stuyvesant, who are fiercely Calvinistic, and to them, the Jews were little more than pigs and dogs, as one Eugene Walcott said recently. He was previously known as Louis X, or better known to you today as Louis Farrakhan, who said, well, I'll even repeat it, but you heard it a few minutes ago. His view of the Jews are devils, dogs, and pigs. I tell you what, those who have that view will, as Doc would say, will be visited in a devil's hell if anybody visits them in the near future. They're as lost as a golf ball, as a green ball in high weeds. And they're the supporters of the Democrat Party. They're supporters of benign candidates like Uncle Joe, who in a moment will turn their back on Israel given the chance and will undo the good that God's choice for president of these United States for his purposes, Donald Trump, has accomplished. And I say that from my background as an Air Force pilot, intel officer, patriotic American, not as a theologian, not as a pastor, paid by any denomination to say anything. It's my duty and my responsibility under the Constitution of the United States with the First Amendment to say what I believe, and you hear it this morning. If the last thing I ever said before I departed this earth, other than love God, know his word, and teach it to your children, is what I just told you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's all about the Jewish people. And their time has now come. And there lies immediately ahead a 12-year, a 7-year period of tribulation that is, well, it's beyond comprehension. But the church will not be here. And we're at the precipice of that rapture. And those words that I speak, what I've just said to you, is to the vast majority of those professing to be Christians, nonsense. It was nonsense to Peter Stuyvesant, governor of New York and New Amsterdam, at the same time that the real progenitors of the faith of America from New England, Roger Williams, Cotton Mather, and others, were preaching the real gospel. That is, America is a nation, developing nation with God's hand on it, a divine providence in the modern era, a Gentile nation whose journey mirrors that of the Jewish people. America is at a tipping point because we have immoral cads like Joe Biden, foolishly emplaced as placeholders for the real agenda. Brothers and sisters in Christ, the emperor is naked. You can believe what you see. You don't need to be told that he's wearing the most wonderful clothes in the world and only the wisest can see it. Be fooled by pride or complacency or anything else. This nation is a tipping point, and I believe the actions have already been taken behind the scenes to remove America's support for Israel, in spite of the great president we have right now, who is the best friend Israel has ever had. They put him on their coins as Cyrus because they respect him. Ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump was given to us for a brief period of time, and I believe it's going to end before the 31st of October of this year. He was given to us briefly to call those who can be called into repentance for the godlessness this nation has done in the last couple of generations.
1 minute.
We have been ruled by people who hate God, having been founded by people who love them and who love God's people, the Jews. I agree, Dr. Youngblood, we're at a tipping point. I believe we're beyond it. I believe this house of cards is about to fall courtesy of the Democrats. But God is sovereign, and we don't give up. We continue preaching the gospel in season and out of season. I'm Marshall Wood. I've just told you from the bottom of my heart what I believe to be reality and know on a factual basis. I hope you'll consider the words. I'm going to preach them again Sunday morning in our church, First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road. I'm going to be a little more specific. Come join us at 10:45 and again at 7 at night. Thank you for your patience. God bless you for listening.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.